Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And we got to wrap up what you have to do. We need to kind of come to a closure on how to get our framework, our Constitution back, based on the framework it was designed. In other words, folks, we have a bottom-up government. In other words, we're the boss. We actually select people to go and serve us, and we have constrained them to only do those things delegated. They have convinced us that they have the power to do anything that they agree upon as according to the parties. In other words, because we have allowed the parties to rule us, oh, well, as long as they agree or as long as the majority, which is supposedly the party's representing us. We do not have a party form of government. We do not have a party monarchical form of government. But you see this. I mean, like the Clintons, how did they become a monarchy or these crowned princes? I mean, they're like those who rule us, the Kennedys, the Clintons, the Bushes. How is it that they've been granted this level of exaltation above us? Because, oh, we have succumbed to the trappings of, you know, people greater than us, and nobody is greater than you or I. Everybody puts their pants on, their shirts on. Everybody gets dressed the same way. As a matter of fact, you know, there's this line, and I won't get into the album or what have you, but basically it's a song, and there's this point where it talks about, you know, we all get, you know, put into our grave. And when, you know, we all decompose, none of us are gold. I mean, we may think that we're better than everybody else, but when nature takes its course and we decompose, what's left is pretty much the same in one grave to the next, to the next, to the next. Other than those things that you bury with yourself, the ornaments and whatever, those, you know, things that get buried, put into your grave with you, but you yourself offer nothing more to the earth than anybody else. And so my point is, folks, is that the fact that we actually look at anyone that is living and breathing anything greater than they are, they're just another man, they're just another woman. And yeah, there's just two genders. But the point is that we need to start thinking of a bottom-up, we're the boss paradigm. Now, one of the things that we talked about, and we've kind of have really hammered this whole holding our public servants accountable. Well, so if we're the boss, at what level do we exert our power? Do we exert our power as a collective nation? No. If that was the case, then all power would be at the national level. All power is at the local level, which means that we can't allow our local county public servants to convince us that, oh, well, we're just administrators for the state. No, we elect you to represent us. And if you're not going to do that, we're not representing you. You're not going to represent us anymore, period. You know, you don't get our votes because you're a good, you know, stooge, because you're a good pawn to be utilized to ingratiate yourself with side, you know, kickbacks and side advantages and what have you. So what we need to start doing, and so it's kind of interesting, I have discovered that as I've worked with different types of groups, Some get it and some don't. And when I say different types of groups, I mean outside the party. There are people that I have met that do not understand because they've just completely, you know, they hate the parties. They just hate the parties. And they go out of their way to actually just, you know, I don't want to be involved in that. And the problem with that paradigm is that they don't understand the fundamental framework of how we have organized ourselves as people. Right, wrong, or indifferent, the parties basically kind of move forward in the model that they started creating as we started growing as a nation. And that model is basically breaking counties down into districts, into precincts. And the lowest level of our political system is a precinct. Now, there's no such thing as a Republican and a Democrat precinct. A precinct is an area of land that equates to a certain number of voters. Now, sometimes you just need to look at how the states do it, but your state may be 1,500 voters in a precinct. So when you're in a city, that may be just, there may be two precincts or three precincts within a city block if you've got a bunch of high rises and a lot that many voters in that area. And so we look at precincts and we actually have representatives. Now, the parties have absconded our representatives, but we need to start thinking about, you know, if you really live in a highly populated county, then start thinking in precincts. It's the same thing, though, with living in a, you know, a very rural county. Start thinking in precincts, because you have to find people at each precinct level to say, we're going to demand this constitutional compliance. Now, this is why I will start off with saying your fastest track in, you know, getting the county on board, the fastest track is getting a party, you know, like you're the largest party possible. And we have to realize that many of the Republican and Democratic parties at state level, excuse me, are co-opted. I mean, they're corrupt. Almost all of them are. But that doesn't mean your county has to be corrupt. As a matter of fact, you know, I see this. I'll poke Washington in the eye, because, you know, the party has been functioning under a very tight control, and that tight control has been the population center. In other words, the Seattle area controls the Washington Party. And because of that, because they have that control, Washington has not been able to, I mean, it is sliding down this gradual slope because the progressives in the Republican Party have basically co-opted and have made concessions to guarantee that the Democratic Party grows and that the liberal agenda moves forward, which is exactly how they destroy, you know, your party system in your state. And they start implementing processes and procedures that guarantee the progressive agenda to move forward. And so they actually go into your Republican parties and they co-opt them. And so we've seen this, and it's not just Washington. I talk to people in South Dakota, and they complain about how the Democrats are controlling the Republican Party. The RINOs are those people who are embracing this globalist agenda. So, folks, what you have to do, because I'm here to tell you, the majority of the Washington State Republican Party, if you really go throughout the state, the majority of the people are not happy with what Seattle is doing. But why do they let them continue? Because they have gone down the progressive paradigm that populations matter. In other words, the mass, the population center, Seattle, should have better representation than every other county. Now, that flies in the face of how our republic, as I told you, no county is greater than another. Put all of the judges of your state so that each county judge is all in a room, and then you convince all of them that the one that actually reigns, the judge that sits at the seat, at the bench of the most populated county because he makes the most money, folks, that he's better than the rest of the judges. He's not. He has no more power than the rest of them. They all possess the same power. So how is it that we have allowed ourselves to aggrandize just because the money is there? Oh, well, money makes power. Not in our system. As a matter of fact, money should become the handicap. And so, and we'll get into that some other time. The fact of the matter is that we need to actually start holding the counties equal so that when you elect your state official, your state chair, you know, it is done by county delegation that each county gets one vote instead of allowing extra representation to your population centers. This is how they're ruling you, folks. And the more and more that they go down this path. And so what you have to do is you have to start changing bylaws and all that. But I'm not going to get involved in how to really move your state party. My point is that if you get people within your county, like a party, like the Republican Party, the Constitution Party, whatever party that actually has a good foothold, you know, that can actually, you know, start mobilizing, get and start unifying all of these people. As a matter of fact, the whole point is to dissolve the party system. Folks, if we're demanding full compliance of the Constitution, I want you to think about this. We're demanding full compliance of the Constitution. We don't want to see an agenda that says we want compromise. You know, that if the Republicans and the Democrats, we want to repeal and replace Obamacare. No. It's compliance. You don't have the authority to do it, get rid of it. You don't have the authority to do this, get rid of it. You don't have the authority to do all of these things, get rid of them. It's that simple. It really is. If you don't have the authority, you have no business doing it. You have no business taking on a penny of debt to spend on anything you don't have the authority to spend on. When we start going down that path, it sheds the party. It sheds our political system of agendas. It's not about the morality of an issue. It's about whether you actually have the power to dictate marriage or to kill babies. That's not within your power. That's never been delegated. You can't even assume under the Bill of Rights that you have the authority to say abortion is legal. Folks, that we have a Ninth Amendment that basically secures that all other rights that may, you know, even enumerations cannot be construed to actually deny the rights that are held by the people. These fundamental rights, these inalienable rights, such as the right of life. There's no way the government being involved in abortion can allow them to overstep these fundamental rights and construe that they have the ability to deny these rights to the unborn or to dictate what marriage really is. They don't have these rights. They don't have the power. They've convinced us that through the court system and the party system. So this is why we kind of point the finger at where the real problems are, where are our suspects, which is kind of what we did. And we'll go through this next week. I will go through, because I've kind of talked about, but I'm going to go back through this because the argument is coming. This coming legislative session, you're going to have state houses that are going to be they're going to be wasting your money because they'll be enthralled in fighting for or against the convention instead of saying, hold on here, what are we trying to fix? What is the real problem? So that we can logically deduce what is the appropriate action. Don't tell me that I either have to do this or that. When we actually see that there are very specific things that solve very specific problems. And you're trying to misconstrue, you're trying to misconstruct what we're really dealing with here. So back to your county. So an individual can actually take the initiative. An individual can actually, you know, step in and start doing this. Folks, this isn't about you. It's not about them. It's not about any entity or organization. It is about us. It is about we the people. It is about uniting and holding our public servants and our government accountable to the powers delegated. So this is why we actually have to step aside from, you know, these organizational, you know, relevance or maintaining, you know, this continuity. And we got to support this organization. Any organization that places itself above the Constitution is, as far as I'm concerned, an enemy to the Constitution. And what I mean by that is if it's the party, if it's even the John Birch Society or, you know, the Second Amendment organizations, anybody that places themselves above the Constitution or claims to have the righteous position over the Constitution. Because, see, the Constitution is just not about the Second Amendment. I mean, near as I can tell, there's a lot more words than just the Second Amendment on that piece of paper. And so anybody that says, well, this is the only thing that we're focused on, I'm telling you, they are telling you that they don't care about the Constitution. They only care about a few words in it. This is why if you really start looking at the organizations and you understand what they're doing is they're getting you to focus on a very specific line of the Constitution, all they're doing is getting you to turn your back on the rest of the Constitution. So how is it that these are favorable organizations? This is why the Uniters and Dividers pages, when we start putting this forward, and as a matter of fact, we will solicit and maybe we'll even have, you know, we haven't heard from. We need to hold these people accountable. In other words, let's say, because this is how some organizations like to play politics. We haven't made an official position. Well, these are the not to be trusted because they won't take an official position on supporting the Constitution. This is how you need to start separating the wheat from the chaff within the businesses in your county. If they're not going to take a position, you can't trust them. We want to make sure that they are supporting the rule of law and our form of government. If they're not supporting it, or if they claim to, oh, well, you know, we're not going to get involved with you, we're going to do it on our own, then they're dividers, period. And which means that they're a big part of the problem. They're directly contributing to the problem because we all need to unite. It's time to put aside what color hats we wear. It's time to put aside whatever our differences are. Whatever our self-interest and our differences are, we have to put those aside. If you don't understand where we are and where we're heading in this next election and the next few years politically, then I can't offer anything here. I think that everybody that listens to this show absolutely does understand. And I think that it's about time because most people have woken up. They're just, I'm sorry, you know, they're sleeping in a fantasy or they're sleeping in a concocted world that they believe in because it's just like the parties. Just like I started this show off. How many people really believe that, well, as long as the Democrats are in control, then they get to do whatever they want. That's how it works. No. That is not how it works. We have to start breaking these paradigms. And it's not about political compromise. The Constitution doesn't facilitate political compromise except on those things delegated. Are we going to war or not? You compromise whether we are or not. If we're not going to war, then that's it. It's done. That's how you make that decision. But you can't say, oh, well, we want to regulate and we want to mandate these new light bulbs because, you know, this person or this company has been very, you know, liberal in contributing to our political causes. And so we want to go with green energy. This is all a scam, folks. It's always been a scam, and they've been bilking us and bilking us. It's time to stop their gravy train, because that's all they're doing is taking advantage. So what we have to do, and what you need to do, is if you can actually get people within the Constitution Party, people within the Republican Party, people within the Libertarian Party, whatever, Independent American Party, I don't care. Get people to change their focus to demand full compliance of the Constitution. Start understanding that these committees of constitutional compliance must be established in your county, that you need to start forcing constitutional compliance in this paradigm into your state house. That is their obligation. That is why they take that oath. That's why we connected the dots. It's all about compliance to the Constitution because their oath demands it. So as you start going out, the one thing that you can do, and like I said, you get fast-tracked if you get your party to say, we want to see change. We want to see the rule of law. We want to see full compliance. What does the party gain? Everything. The people, everything. As a matter of fact, the party will actually go through a metamorphosis of standing for one particular thing, and it will grow and evolve into standing for the Constitution and the champions of liberty, and individual sovereignty. Because when the party actually stands for protecting the rule of law and ensuring the government only does those things that have been delegated to them, then they are protecting your liberties. They're protecting your businesses. They're protecting your livelihood. Remember, no state can make or enforce any law that abridges your privileges or immunities. They can't take you. They can't tell you you can't work. You can't provide for yourself. They have no. I mean, that again is a Ninth Amendment violation. When they shut you down, it's not only a 14th Amendment, but it's a Ninth Amendment. They cannot construe that powers that are enumerated can be used to deny you these fundamental privileges and rights that you are guaranteed, that are inalienable, unalienable, whichever word you prefer. Unalienable is what Thomas Jefferson used. So let's say you can't get a party, then you actually have to go out and start doing this yourself. But there are plenty of people out there that are really pissed off, and you can't be working and you can't be living in a bubble where you don't know like-minded people. And you all you've got to do is get people to acknowledge that we are all a part of the problem unless we're uniting on one very specific thing. And that one very specific thing is that entire Constitution. Not just a part of it, the entire Constitution. Ask a Christian, what page of the Bible is the page that you're adhering to? Ask a Christian, do you still offer sacrifices that are called for in the Bible? Of course not. We have evolved. We have evolved into a new law, not a law of magistrates, but a law where we individually obtain, you know, our repentance and forgiveness, and we live according to and accept Him and His sacrifice. My point is, folks, is that we as individuals have to unite on the principles of the Constitution, every single one of them. So we actually have to start driving. And so actually I'm going into break in just a second here. When we come back, we want to start driving and helping people understand what is up for this coming election. And we're going to talk about three very specific petitions that are going to be necessary to help wake people up regarding our election process and our form of government. Remember, we're a Republican form of government, a hybrid Republican form of government. We'll get into that when we come back. We'll be right back after this promo. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so one of the things, and we're working in with the campaign in South. That is going to be a statewide campaign in driving three very specific petitions that are in addition to all of the other petitions that we have. And so what we're looking to do is we're going to have one petition that's going to help you understand the apportionment and your representation. See, we are a Republican form of government, which means it is representative of the sovereigns. We kind of go through this. The sovereigns being we, the people, and the government we institute. What is the one government we institute? We institute our counties. That's the one government we institute. And the one government that we instituted has now been basically marginalized. Our county governments have been marginalized by the federal courts. In the 1960s, they actually said, we don't care about that anymore. How dare you? How dare you tell us that our government that we have instituted and used to establish this state government and even you, federal government, you telling us that it doesn't matter anymore? That is how they have taken our foundation and our footing away from us. We have to restore our counties. And so as we start looking at, you know, this apportionment right there that's in the Constitution, just to be clear, this is being included in Why Counties Matter. But just to be clear, it was affixed in the Constitution on the morning of the 17th, the day the Constitution was signed. It was affixed that 40,000 people, not to exceed 40,000 people to one representative, which means that one representative could not represent more than 40,000 people, that they would break it down in such manner. So, at the very beginning of the day, Mr. Gorham stood up and said, I move that we change that. I think that that's too many people. And to be clear, in a representative government, how many people are being represented by one person is pretty important. And what we're talking about is not how many people it takes to support the lifestyle of a person, but how many people can be represented on the issues of those powers delegated, which means that they said, you know, 40,000 is too much. We don't believe that, you know, we can be properly represented when there's one person being representing 40,000. We need to reduce that down so that we have better representation. And so that was seconded and moved, or moved and then seconded. And at that point in time, this is when George Washington actually injected himself for practically the first time since the convention really kicked off after they established decorum, leadership, and all of that. I mean, Washington was just a quiet observer ensuring, and he only stepped in when, you know, things needed to be reeled in. That was his job. He was administrating the convention. But this was the one time he actually stood up and said, you know, I personally do not believe that we are properly represented with 40,000. I think it needs to be 30,000. The greater the number, the harder it is for us to actually, you know, have an equal voice. We need to reduce our representation down. It wasn't about really equality of representation other than the adequacy of representation amongst the body of 30 versus the body of 40. Not equal representation between one representative and the other. Therefore, they all unanimously voted to change that number in the Constitution to 30,000, to affix it, that we the people cannot be represented by anything that exceeds 30,000 to 1. So how is it today, folks, that your congressional districts are based on 1 million people? South Dakota only has one representative, and they have just over a million. I think Montana has two because they're over. So when you start looking at how they're apportioning, how did they come up with these numbers? So this is why Why Counties Matter Most, this article that I've got, is going to be coming out. We're getting close to being done. And so we're actually going to prove to you that this number that was affixed in the Constitution at 30,000, they understood that it needed to be modified down the road. So they actually gave us an amendment for that process because they knew that Congress did not have the power to change that number. Okay, so let's talk about that number. That number today as 30,000 would mean that we would have a House of Representatives that would be based on, you know, 30,000 with the population. I would say just under probably 8,000 people that would be representatives in the House of Representatives. And most people go, well, that's way too big of a number. Absolutely not. You have to understand that the reason that they actually kind of, you know, had such a high number of representation, we could actually go even lower. With such a high number of representation, then we could actually, put all of these people into a small room with a few chairs. In other words, they capped what our representation would be by creating a fixed room with fixed chairs with 435 representatives. Folks, I'm here to tell you that that wasn't the design of the Constitution to allow the limitations of a physical structure. The whole point was, in the days that they framed this Constitution, the only way things could be politically done is you had to put everybody in the same room. And in the early 1900s, they didn't have a way to actually, you know, adapt, you know, to a video teleconferencing or anything like that. They didn't have the technology. So what Congress was supposed to do was they were supposed to actually change the chambers so that the chambers would be larger, that could accommodate 30,000, or Congress needed to provide an amendment to the Constitution, and there was that one out there already that would have allowed it to go to 40,000 to 50,000. But instead, Congress chose to violate the Constitution and eventually passed this thing called the Reapportionment Act, which it was this, again, sidestepping and actually violating the Constitution. So I want you to understand what a gift from God this has been, because Congress has constantly and deliberately thought that they could get away with ignoring the Constitution. They have made such a mess that makes it easy for us to actually apply the fixes. So if we go back and we start looking at how states should be represented by 30,000, this would literally change. And what this would allow to happen is allow your representation to actually stay at home. because today we do have the technology. There's no reason why they have to be physically in the same room with each other to actually be able to vote and to be able to get work done. As a matter of fact, if you really look at the enumerated work that they have, they're not supposed to be involved in investigating steroids. As a matter of fact, the one thing that they're supposed to do is they're actually supposed to be shutting down all of this invasion. They're supposed to shut down the invasion of America being sold out. The fact is, the PGA, the NFL, the NBA, these foreign nations cannot invest in any entities. So all of their investments need to be wiped out. There's no authority for the selling out of America to foreign entities. That's not within the Constitution. So the one thing that this large Congress has to do is they actually have to pull up their britches, and they're going to have to say, yep, if we don't have the authority to do it, we can't do it. But I'm here to tell you, so most people look at, and I just want to put it all on the table. Most people say, well, shoot, these guys have 20 aides. They don't need 20 aides. They're going to be working out of their homes. They're going to be working out of the county seat. Or if they're close enough to the state capitol, then but we will give them rooms to where they can actually meet at the county seat. This way, they're available to you. How does that improve your representation? Absolutely, folks. So the whole point is now we get our arms around representation. Now let's shift to Article 2 of the Constitution and let's look at the Electoral College. How is the Electoral College defined? The Electoral College is defined by representatives and senators. In other words, each state gets one elector for each representative and one elector for each senator. So now that you've ballooned into a much larger state, each elector will now be able to cast their vote. And if we actually follow the Constitution, follow the logic, folks, the party has no power to choose your electors. This is the other part that we're including into this, because it is clear. It is clear via the process. We're actually giving you the process that the voters are to choose their elector. When they started going to statewide and all this other stuff at large and all of that, that is not representative. What the state did was they tried to basically homogenize everything to allow and actually open the door for the parties to do that. But if you look in the 1830s, like 1832, it came down to the voters chose their electors, their own elector. And the two electors that were statewide that were done by everybody were the electors for the representatives, in other words, for the Senate. So in other words, if we actually shifted and your representation in your county, or actually in your congressional district, you choose this very specific elector that is going to be dedicated this perversion of the Electoral College in allowing winner take all, the party to win and take all, because that is all unconstitutional, folks. The Constitution doesn't allow party tickets, nor does it allow winner take all. As a matter of fact, it is repugnant to republicanism. It is repugnant to the concept of representation. How is it that you can lose your representation because the party said so? The party is actually selling you out to say, well, this is how we want to go and vote as if the 12th Amendment kicked in. Folks, I'm here to tell you, the bottom line, when the Electoral College is to work, the Electoral College is to represent you. Your electors are whom you are supposed to choose. So we go through this in the details. So why is GR even going into this? When we start going down this path, and this is why these three petitions will be really helpful, because you will actually see, if you live in a county of 300,000, that means you'll have 10 electors. That means that your county may have these little blue sections and have large areas of red sections, and your representation will be more appropriately affixed, and those electors will be able to vote for your president. And folks, now I want you to look at all of America. Most people, when they look at LA County, they just say, oh, LA County, Orange County, all of these counties are all blue. Go look at the county maps. When you start looking at the county maps, you'll see that there are still large pockets of red. As we create these new electoral college and congressional seats and the boundaries for them that will actually match and align with the Constitution, the number of red will go through the roof. The reason that they've been able to get away with what they're doing is by making these districts large so that they can actually control them. And that's how they've been able to, you know, do this gerrymandering or Henrymandering is really what it is. But the reality, folks, is that in your county, you'll actually be able to choose your elector, and you'll actually be able to have that elector vote for your president. They get one shot. And, you know, most people really are concerned with the way things go. I am here to tell you that the 2020 election, had we followed the Constitution, Biden would never have been selected. He could not have been chosen. Had we followed the constitutional process of the 12th Amendment, Biden would not have been chosen. Trump would have been. Because the 12th Amendment would have kicked in, and there were 30 red states to 20. Now, knowing that, help me out, Cheney in Wyoming would have actually voted for, cast her vote for Biden, that what I'm here to tell you, folks, is that Trump would have actually won, even though there may have been a couple of coups. He would have overwhelmingly won. And this is the reason why they don't want to follow the Constitution. Because bottom line, when we look at America, the heartland of America is actually controlled by the conservative bodies. We've just been co-opted to believe because these population centers have become so dominant in democracy, in their mob rule. They cheat. And so the third petition that we're actually pulling into this is the petition that proves that our current election system is not only corrupt, it is unconstitutional, because the federal government has no authority to dictate and to be involved in what processes we use and how we're to function in our state elections. So this next petition will dive into how the federal government has been regulating and have basically created and concocted a system that would control the outcome, and why Dominion and the Chinese have been directly involved, as well as Dell Computers. I mean, the states didn't just stumble across all of this. It just didn't fall in front of them. The federal government has been manipulating, managing, and directing all of this. And the fact is, they have no constitutional authority to be involved in the state elections. To be clear, they may have the ability to choose the date, time, and the manner on the Senate and representative elections, but when it comes to presidential elections, the state legislature trumps. When you look at Article 2, every 4 years is a presidential election. And there, it doesn't state that the Congress shall actually dictate that. That goes to the state legislatures, which is why the state legislatures basically control both elections. Because, you know, why go back and forth when they're both actually delegated in the federal elections, but the presidential election is strictly for state legislatures to dictate the time, place, and manner. So how is it that we've actually in our presidential elections been given a federal voting system when they don't even have any authority to be involved in it? Folks, this petition will actually, and this is where we're hoping in working with Mr. McGibbons and company, that we're actually going to prove their involvement and actually demand that your existing election system be completely abandoned and go back to old school voting in precinct, voting by paper ballot, and actually holding a legitimate and having an election that has zero chance or such a reduced chance of manipulation and compromise, period. There'll be no electronic involvement at all. And folks, if you actually support these petitions will literally prove when we go into these states that actually go back to the old hammer and chisel and prove the outcomes of these elections. And you're going to go, oh my gosh, you know, how is it that we thought that we had good elections? I've been watching elections for a long time. And in the 2012 election, I realized that there were at least 12 to 20 some million fraudulent elections in the electing of Obama over Romney. And nobody made any contentions of election fraud. We've had election fraud problems since the 50s. Look up the term landslide Lyndon. You can't tell me that the people of this one small town in Texas chose to all, you know, show up at the polls and happen to line up in alphabetical order as they cast their vote for the senator, for basically Lyndon. And so Lyndon Johnson. And so the term landslide Lyndon actually was a very sarcastic remark of, you know, well, we don't have any evidence, but, you know, what's the likelihood of that actually happening? That the people of the town all happened to line up in alphabetical order and then voted in that order. The only reason and what ended up happening was because they were in the rush of trying to get, you know, the outcome the way that they wanted to get Lyndon Johnson as their senator, this corrupt man. They actually just took the role of the voters and just literally wrote their names and wrote down how they voted. So we know that even with a paper ballot, it is still susceptible. But this is where we actually have this job. And though, let me back out. As a county, and as you start getting organized, we need to make sure that we, the people, become the witnesses, that we're empowered to ensure that we have witnesses involved in our election process, that we have we, the people, involved in all of these committees. Folks, as we look at jury duty as the civil obligation, and how many people do you know that they actually do not sign up to vote because they don't want to be a juror? I've known way too many people that have done that so that they don't have to be called for jury duty. That's unacceptable. As a matter of fact, if you're a U.S. citizen, then you have to participate. You have to be a part of a committee. You have to be involved in some way in governing yourself. We can't call ourselves a self-governing system. We can't have a self-governing system if we're not involved in our own governing. You know, the more we get involved, the less we have to pay the taxes for the government we need. You want to actually go back to single household incomes that are capable of actually providing for the household? Start taking on more responsibility in your community. Start taking on the responsibilities of what these governments are actually selling you out for. Protect yourself from actually having to pay these taxes and pay for the growth of government. Constrain government by constraining ourselves and keeping ourselves involved. The more we peel back away from government, the more it gets out of control. So I can go down all of these different ways of telling you and showing you that if we want to have a low tax base, if we want to change our economics back to single household incomes and actually providing and having a strong family unit and having a strong community and having individual liberty and individual sovereignty, we have to start working and functioning as a community and as a county. And the only way to do that is we got to look at the structure. And I'm going back to how the counties are designed. The counties are designed based on the fundamental element of the precinct. I mean, our society is designed on the fundamental element of the family. You have 1,500 voters or however much your precincts are designed. That's how they designed them. They're based on, you know, an area of this many voters, and precincts are physical areas within your county. And they're divided. The more population you have in your county, they start dividing into districts. So the more populated, the more districts you have. That's how we start clumping and grouping and organizing. So start thinking in that structure. That's why the parties operate in that structure. But they are literally trying to keep you out and keep you out from being involved. When a county party starts teaching the Constitution and starts standing up by using First Amendment petitions for the county members and holding them accountable, you now have a party working for we the people. You now have a party that has embraced American republicanism. You now have a party or a group, an organization that will lead in taking back our government. You know, there's a lot of people, and Milton Friedman basically said in his book, Free to Choose, that most people dread the cure, the elixir, because the elixir has a bitter taste and it has some ill effects. Those ill effects pale in comparison to doing nothing. Those ill effects pale in comparison to all that we're to lose if we move forward, if we allow this globalist agenda to move forward. They have no constitutional authority to have the economic forum in America. They have no constitutional standing to allow any foreign entity to own any American resource, period. Folks, we have to take the stand. We actually have to stand up and demand full compliance to our Constitution. We have to start recognizing those who have agendas are actually out selling us out for whatever little gain that they're going to make, and we will all rue the day for the fact that we never stepped in, woke up, and said, hey, look, you can't do this. We demand compliance of the Constitution, and your local county politicians, your commissioners, your supervisors, they are your first line of defense, as I talked about. They're that first echelon. And if they refuse to take a stand on the Constitution, get rid of them because they're not representing you and your Constitution. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.